This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays. Today, I have two special guests, but I'm going to begin with one of my all-time favorites, the person I consider to be the leading scientific expert on 9/11, who has degrees in civil engineering with an emphasis in structural and engineering mechanics, also known as applied physics, and in materials engineering science, which so far as I have been able to discern are the disciplines most directly related to understanding what happened to the World Trade Center. She has what I consider to be the most important research website related to 9/11 at drjudywood.com. And, of course, it isn't rocket science to infer that I'm talking about Dr. Judy Wood. Judy, welcome back to the show.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to learn about your recent efforts. It's been a while. Morgan, I believe, had you on as his guest during a trip I made back east recently, but I'm very pleased to have you on as my guest.
Thanks. Thank you.
Where would you like to begin while we try to track down John Hutchinson, who we're also going to have on?
Where should I begin?
Should we go to your what, drjudywood.com? Should we go to your website, Judy?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going there now. I should warn the audience, by the way, that I've had a terrible week. I'm suffering the effects of stomach flu, and it's really thrown me off my game. So if I don't sound the same or whatever, there's the explanation. I'm on your site, Judy, right now.
Okay, and go down to there's various rows of pictures.
Right.
And you can go down to the third row where it shows
anomalies at the WTC and the Hutchinson effect.
Yes. And before we go there, you can look at there's various pairs of pictures. There's events that correlated between what we saw happen at the World Trade Center and the Hutchinson effect. And as you know, for the past couple of years, I've been collecting evidence about what I see as having happened at the World Trade Center. I didn't know the answer. I didn't know what happened. I didn't know how it was done, but the first step is to determine what happened. You don't start out, well, I know about a BB gun, a slingshot, and bubble gum. So, eeny, meeny, miny, moe. It's got to be one of those that we pick from. No, you first determine what happened. Once you know what happened, then you can determine how it happened. And I've collected all of this evidence, and to keep from biasing my observations, I made up new words and new terms, just generic terms for the different phenomena I noticed. And after looking at all of those, I came upon the Hutchinson effect, and oh my gosh, every single one of the effects are described there, can be reproduced, and have been in a lab. Down to the toasty cars, which I guess I'm well known for, identifying, and the round holes in the windows, the fact that you have one type of material destroyed and another type of material right next to it is just fine, like paper unburned next to toasted cars. Yeah, how can that be? But that's all common with the Hutchinson effect.
I'm just getting my feet wet with regard to this, the Hutchinson effect, which turns out to be actually a wide variety of different phenomena.
Correct. It's a group of effects, a whole slew of things that happen.
And I take it they're supposed to have some common cause, something having to do with a high volume of voltage.
Not necessarily, but what how I would describe the result is sort of on a molecular level or an atomic level.
Yeah.
And that was maybe the last straw for making the connection for me, is looking at the image of Tower 2 you know, remember the tipping top, and then all around the joint where it was tipping from, all around those floors, it out came all of this big cloud of dust and fumes and who knows what, and it looked like the building, the material of the building, did something analogous to water turning into steam. It looked like the solid part of the building suddenly expanded like water does when it becomes steam. When water turns changes state into steam, it expands in a volume 1,600 times what it was as water. The water vapors. That's a tremendous amount of expansion.
Now, that would seem to me, Judy, if that happened to a human being, they'd be turned into very fine dust. Would I be wrong?
Well, that's if you're thinking about people as being water. But let's think about...
We are about, 87% water, aren't we?
Yeah, but that's you're relying on heat. And I've never felt that the heat was involved here. Matter of fact, the contrary. In some of the transcripts, first responders talk about the temperature lowering, actually. The first dust cloud felt a little cooler than the ambient temperature. And as you remember when Greg Jenkins was talking with me, he was trying to insert in there vaporization. And no, I call it dustification because I don't know what the process is, but the building turned to dust. It didn't cook. To vaporize something, I think of cooking. And that building wasn't cooked. We never saw piles of burned bodies. You see people running down the street with a dust cloud chasing them. The dust cloud overtakes them and moves on, and you have people there, you know, standing up covered with dust. They're not burned. So we know it wasn't a cooking situation. But the cars have been, you know, pretty intriguing. We see fire, but often there's no smoke, which is another odd characteristic, smokeless fires. So there's this slew of anomalies that's kind of interesting. Oh, and the peeling doors on the vehicles. And the vehicle doors are not laminated, but they look like they're delaminating, which is another odd effect. It just splits in half. But if you think of a solid material where all of the molecules are attracted to each other and they stick together, suddenly, instead of being attracted to each other, it, like a magnet, switch the sign and they're suddenly repelling each other. Imagine what would happen if you did that to a building. It would look like the building expanded like water turning into steam. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's going to take me a while to absorb this. As I say, I'm just starting to get my feet wet here.
The water turning into steam. The water, you know, the little molecules are suddenly expand.
Yeah.
They repel each other.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. My special guest today is Judy Wood, the leading expert on scientific studies of 9/11. Judy, we're at your website, drjudywood.com, and we're looking at some photographs of anomalies, which you're comparing with photographs of the Hutchison effect. And I'm conceding that this is all very novel to me, the Hutchison effect, what it amounts to, what it really represents, its scientific validity is all new to me. So what you're telling me is, very interesting, but also in some ways puzzling. When I went to the John Hutchison website, I found a Hutchison effect, an explanation by Mark A. Solis. This is dated 1999, but when he talks about people who try to replicate it, try to disprove it using other methods, he's saying how their apparatus must be limited to the use of 75 watts of power from a 120-volt AC outlet, since that's all can be used by Hutchison's apparatus to levitate a 60-pound cannonball. I just don't know, you know, what we have going on here. Have you been able to perform any of these Hutchison experiments and replicate them?
The type of equipment that's needed, I do not have in my possession. at this time. There's a tremendous amount of equipment that's needed. It's not like something you do with some pocket change.
Yeah.
In a cubby hole.
Yeah. Because, of course, you know, I mean, while I have lots of reservations about Wikipedia, the article on John Hutchison of Wikipedia suggests that while there's been a great deal of interest in the phenomena he has identified, that no one's been able to replicate them. And, of course, that's raised a lot of questions in the minds of those who aren't quite sure what to make of it.
This is not true. And he has been able to replicate it very repeatedly. And it's puzzling why Wikipedia, well, not puzzling, I think we know why Wikipedia.
Yeah, well, I mean, no, granting the source, but I'm just saying, what kinds of effects, which of the effects is he replicating?
Well, the material coming apart, the levitation, quite a few different things. And it seems to be a hobby of folks to attack others before they do the research on what these effects are.
Uh-huh.
And we see that in the 9/11 truth diversion movement, that it's to divert people from the truth, this movement we have. Why aren't we looking at the truth? Why divert off onto other things? Now, what you have to admit is on 9/11, something extraordinary happened. That was a tremendous amount of energy that came out of the World Trade Center. And it was left just dust. We had, in the morning, we had two 110-story buildings. And by noontime, we had not even a pile of rubble. Basically, just dust.
I know.
That is amazing.
Do you see that article I sent you lately that claimed there was a 12-story pile of rubble there of, you know...
You know, let's deal with looking for truth. We're looking at the truth ourselves. Will you agree that there was 110-story buildings that morning, and by noon, there was just basically dust?
Yeah, sure, I think I would agree with that, Judy.
Now, let's look at this. We're busy focusing on negativeness and negative energy and so forth. Let's look at the positive thing from this. That's a tremendous technology. Why don't we find out how it works? And then good purpose.
If you're putting some eggs in the Hutchison effect basket, do you know how it works?
How it works?
How the Hutchison effect is brought about.
I'm not stating that it was the Hutchison effect. I'm stating it was something, it could have been that or something very much like it.
Uh-huh.
Now, the past few days, past day or so, the events have convinced me even more.
Tell me.
They've been sort of a confirmation. Why would the powers that be want to discredit the Hutchison effect? Any reason? Why is there suddenly this effort to discredit the Hutchison effect?
Well, what, is there a sudden effort to discredit it?
I believe so.
It was curious to me when I had... When I had Ace on yesterday, you know, he had been studying some of the photos for the Hutchison effect, and it seemed to him that some of them involve video fakery. But when I punched out this article in Wikipedia, I was astonished that it had just been updated. It said this page was last modified on 27 February 2008 at 1655.
They modify it pretty often. It still gets modified, you know, ongoing, especially when it's of interest to folks. In the free energy community, this technology has been known for quite a while. And they have a Wikipedia-type page on energy effects. And their page on John Hutchison is very different.
Where do we find that?
I'll put the link up later.
Okay, put a link up later. Yeah. Well, why don't we go through some of your comparisons here? I mean, do you want to look at them in greater detail?
Okay, but one thing I'll comment on is, if somebody shows you a picture of a horse, and then later, you know, and says, what is this, and doesn't show the camera what it is, and you say, oh, this is a picture of a horse, and then later, they photograph you with a picture of a cow, and you're seeing the picture of a horse. In other words, they're taking it out of context. And things often get used that way, and that's not honest. There were some things I heard on the show yesterday that were very troubling to hear, such as that. Anyway, so yeah, let's talk about what's on the webpage. Let's go to from the front page. Click on
anomalies.
There's a Red Bull can there.
The Red Bull can? Okay.
Go ahead and click on that Red Bull can.
All right.
And that takes you to page one.
Right.
Not the index page, but page one. There's the boat videos first. Below that is a description of that product. It was noted by someone saying to get either lift or disruption.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. Let's remember that theme. And there's also a link to that Mark Solis article. But what is interesting about this is if you start noticing, it's either the molecules get pulled apart, disruption, or the entire piece of something is lifted.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Sitting that I'm out of sorts here. Having a long battle this week with stomach flu, so if I sound a little off my game, you're absolutely right. With my special guest, Judy Wood, we're on her website, drjudywood.com, and if you scroll down that home page and to the Hutchison Effect collection of photographs, the second one from the left at the top, we'll bring you to the page where we are now. Judy, go ahead.
Option. So if we go to that and you start down, there's little segments I've put in there from different articles, and there's one that refers to get either lift or disruption.
Yeah. My Solis, the very guy I was quoting before.
He didn't, those other ones. It was,
okay, I'll bring him in.
And there's also the video of the Red Bull can, and one thing that's kind of interesting about that Red Bull can, it sort of takes a bow, like to the audience. It's bending over, and it's like its waist. It does some other things. It's like it's got a character to it. But right below the Red Bull can, you see pictures from the World Trade Center, figures 5, 6, and 7.
Yeah.
We have upside-down cars.
Yeah.
The car is parked in front of WFC1. It's just, you know, that first picture that's upside down.
Yeah.
And it's right side up. Notice the Jeep or SUV, the front end looks very toasted and sort of deformed, but the upside-down car is less disturbed. And if you look at figure 8, it gives you another one of those aha moments. In the foreground, we have an upside-down car, and the underside of it looks fairly good. It you don't see it, the tires look good. And then in the distance on the other side of the fireman, you see some tires sticking up in the air from another vehicle that looks like it's half upside down. And behind that is a whole bunch of trees in full foliage. All the leaves are still in the trees. So why are these cars upside down? Why are the vehicles upside down? If there's a big gust of wind, wouldn't you expect to see the leaves stripped off the trees?
Well, big gusts of wind don't turn cars upside down as a rule anyway. And, of course, below on figure 9, you have more cars, in this case one on its side. And down below, upside down, figure 12.
Yeah, and there's one that's piggybacked in figure 10. And figure 9, you see it, there's an ambulance in the distance. It's fine, but it's on its side. It's over on its side, like at the bottom of the walkway.
Now, Judy, I've been informed that we have John Hutchison on the line. So, John, I want to welcome you to the Dynamic Duo.
Hello.
John, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, your background, your education, especially your training in science and technical subjects?
Well, my education is I flunked my coloring book and blocks. I'm self-taught, and I've been involved in many applications in engineering and research, and one of them happened to be into Nikola Tesla, which was able to replicate a lot of his experiments. And pushing it beyond the envelope there, we were managed to cause levitation of objects and also the destruction of objects, as it's called. And it gained interest into the U.S. Military back in 1983, which they did a lot of experiments and tests with it.
So you grew up in Canada?
Yes, I did.
Whereabouts?
Oh, I'm in New Westminster, British Columbia. I grew up in North Vancouver, by the way.
In North Vancouver?
Yeah, I was away in Europe for a while and just landed in New Westminster.
I presume you went to school there, high school, for example?
I had a private tutor, and we were mostly I was into chemistry quite a bit, and I was in the chemical lab. Also gunsmithing and machine tool work. But a little later on, I got into the Tesla stuff, which is kind of intriguing.
But you never matriculated to a university. You didn't actually earn, you don't have university degrees. You don't have an academic background or a scientific background other than what you learned in the process of your tutoring and your self-learning.
That's right, yes. Thank God for that, because if I went the normal route and all that stuff, then I'd be programmed to not think outside of the box.
Excuse me, I've been under the weather all week with a nasty case of the stomach flu. How have you made your living, John?
Well, I made my living through various defense contractors, giving demonstrations for them, as well as, that's Canadian, as well as American and Germany. And of late, I've been doing a lot of television shows. There's really high demand for that, so they pay large amounts of money for coming here to film.
And before you got into the effects and so forth, your discoveries of how were you, you know, making ends meet?
Oh, way back past 1970?
Say, anytime. Fill me in.
Wow, that's back in 1970. Prior to that, I was involved in a major court case against the Canadian government on gun control issues. And prior to that, it was just on welfare, getting odd jobs, that kind of thing. So, it was a lot of fun. Not so long time ago. It seems like that.
Judy are kind of striking contrast cases because, of course, Judy has multiple degrees in academic background, 60 peer-reviewed articles, and your background is completely the opposite.
Yeah, kind of wild and woolly there, but it's been an interesting adventure.
I
get along fine with the scientists and that. We work together on different projects.
Go ahead, Judy.
Yeah, I've noticed something different with John than the typical student. John thinks. The student's program. Well, they check the answer to the back of the book, and that's, you know, what the answer is.
Well, tell me what you think you got going here, Judy.
So, when I was first emailing John, I would present some things to him, and the trolls on the forums, I think we all know how the trolls are, they would ask questions just to stir up a fight. John would ask a question, I'd explain the answer that I thought, what I saw, and I'd show him the pictures, and he then understood. And then added even additional things to it. And that was very different than the program kind of response. Everyone jump on the bandwagon.
So you feel you're attaining a high degree of communication and mutual understanding with John.
Yes. And there were things that he brought up after he looked at the picture I sent him that I hadn't seen in the pictures.
Okay.
For example, that hole in the basement of Tower 2, you know, the hole in the street, and there's a... those guys are climbing down there.
Yeah.
Supposedly with this molten metal, but there's a puddle.
Yeah.
And John was noticing somebody's shirt down there at the bottom.
Somebody's shirt?
Yeah, somebody's shirt that's sitting in the puddle on the ground. You know, there's various details like that would be seen in the photographs.
Mm-hmm.
Once you look, and you look, and you think, and you observe, trying to pigeonhole everything, and I think our educational system teaches pigeonholing. Multiple choice tests, you know, here's the answer, memorize, like a robot, instead of thinking.
Stand by, we'll be right back with my special guests today, Judy Woods and John Hutchins. This is Jim Fetzer on The Dynamic Duo. I have two special guests today, John Hutchinson, who's associated with what is known as the Hutchinson Effect, which is a range of phenomena that have been very perplexing and difficult for most to understand, and Judy Wood, who is, in my opinion, the leading scientific expert on research related to the World Trade Center. Judy, you know, I mean, if John's work applies here, I mean, that would have potential promise if we understood the mechanism by means of which these phenomena have been induced by John, and then what would be the parallel or analogous mechanism, possibly on a much greater scale, that would apply to have brought about the parallel phenomena at the World Trade Center? Is this then been the subject that you and he have discussed and contemplated?
What I have done is look at the similarities with the phenomena, because until I discovered John's work, I didn't know really what did it, but looking at the evidence, I could start describing what must have done it or the nature of it. As you know, I kept limiting things more and more, getting a smaller and smaller circle of unknowns. You know, I would say a beam weapon, but I wouldn't say from where or what type of beam or what wavelengths. And I often would say, well, here's a spectrum. Take your pick or mix and match whichever ones you please.
Uh-huh.
And apparently that's what John does.
Well, how has your contact with him or your newfound familiarity with his research strengthened your own?
It's given hope to what we can do with this world. I think, again, what I was mentioning earlier, that was some horrendous activity on that day. Something amazing happened. And think if we can harness that energy and use it for good purposes.
Well, do you feel you understand the phenomena that he has detected sufficiently well to be able to understand how the analogous phenomena could have been brought about? In other words, the causal mechanisms in the World Trade Center?
Numerous articles, they're presented in on this webpage, in this series.
Yeah.
You have to see that these various phenomena have been described by others, quite a few others, and it does, it seems to interface in the area of cold fusion as well. And it's really interesting to read some of these articles.
Do you believe the effects that John describes and has, you know, created videos of and so forth are manifestations of cold fusion?
I don't know what you call cold fusion. I don't make clear lines between things. All these phenomena are interrelated, and it has to do with things on a very small scale, like on the atomic level.
So you think microphysics actually might hold the key to understanding the events of the World Trade Center?
I don't know about understanding it. We know the events occurred. You mean being able to reproduce it?
Yeah, for example.
Well, it was produced to begin with, so we know something there were.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
So I think you'll have to agree that something happened on 9/11.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
And so we know it's real. It works, whatever it is.
You could say there was a replication when the North Tower came down after it was destroyed, after the South Tower was destroyed.
Right, it is repeatable.
But that doesn't mean you or I could do it. John, do you have any trouble replicating your results?
No. Actually, I've been doing it since 1997 for production companies that come and go out of here, for NBC, Griffin Productions, National Geographic TV and Film, plus many others. It's pretty repeatable right now as it stands. But in the old days, it was pretty tough to do sometimes. But
What's one of your favorites that you have, exhibited numerous times that has been relatively straightforward to replicate?
Well, I think the movements is a lot of fun to do. It unfortunately seems to affect a 10-square-block radius in the city. and it's becoming more and more complaints are being lodged to the city hall, which is not a good thing. But anyway, it's
Elaborate on that. You mean that the effects you're bringing about are having large scale repercussions over a 10 block area?
That's right. Yes, according to some doctors and Tom Sky, who was here filming not too long ago, he suffered some drastic effects, which he had to be interviewed by Ken Shoulders, who's working on my research also and replicated some of it. But just the other day, I learned also that a tenant in here is saying the library computers, the signals dropped right down and went back up again, as well as his battery went dead in his computer, and his clock stopped, and was knocking on my door, asking me, well, you know, this is going on kind of thing, and I'm thinking, okay, I know the effects are sometimes can start to get into other buildings and have been the cause of tenants and people going to the news media and talking about it. I just don't want people coming around, saying, well, this is getting a little too much.
Take one of the simplest phenomena you replicate. What's the total apparatus required to replicate the effect?
The total at this point in time or before?
Anytime now. If I wanted to replicate it, what would it take for me to do it? What's the phenomenon and what would it take for me to replicate it?
Well, I'd say about several tons of equipment to do that. That means RF generation equipment, small micro Tesla type generators, phase inverters, as well as extremely high electrostatics and a small alpha beta source.
So if we're looking at some of your films, then there's this couple of tons of equipment that we're not seeing in the films, right?
Normally people like to film in on the target area.
Yeah.
And then I'm at the control panel, then in the TV shows they'll actually come around and film me doing all of the operations of the...
And you're talking about a couple of tons of equipment to move a nail around or cause the water to boil or whatever. I mean, it's, you know, or to crush a can. What type of phenomena are we talking about? You know, all the above?
Yeah, basically. It's all working on a subatomic level. I mean, there's been scientific papers written up on it. And previous to that, the effects were very random but very strong. It was about roughly 22 tons of equipment I had in the warehouses where we did the main demonstrations.
Well, if we're talking about something like a World Trade Tower, how many tons of equipment do you think would be involved there? Or are you...
Well, getting into that aspect of the World Trade Center, it's a rough area, but... I'm thinking of foreign countries that have the technology, like... that made mainstream media, such as CNN, and that were in Iraq. The Russians were coming in to get out their documents and machines that incorporated scalar weapon technologies, and that made mainstream news media. And it's always been a concern of the U.S. government with the Soviets and the advanced type of scalar weaponry they do have. And they actually have projected it across North America in 1978 to 1981, what they call the Soviet woodpecker signals, which were horrendous, which were very strong and affected AM radio.
Tell me more about this. What were the woodpecker signals?
Well, they would jam up radio, ham communications and other communications as well as AM radio. And then they would set off these huge, what they call cold hole explosions in the atmosphere, which made mainstream media. It caused a lot of sensation, a lot of TV shows. And
We'll come back to this momentarily. Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guests, John Hutchinson and Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today I have two special guests, Judy Wood, well known to my audience, and John Hutchinson of the Hutchinson Effect. John, I'd like to ask you a bit more about your work here. Theories, of course, are common in science, and you know, presumably there's a theory about the phenomena that you are studying, and that theory involves certain laws that involve causal relations, so that if you have a certain arrangement or constellation of conditions, then with either invariably or with a certain probability you're going to produce or induce or bring about a certain effect. And I'm just wondering if you could sketch for us, you know, something about the theory that lies behind the phenomena that you take to be at least a sketch of an explanation of what's going on here.
Okay, for sure. There was I don't normally go into theories too much. I have my own personal theory that is affected on the subatomic level. But René Louis Vallée and Andreas Sakharov wrote up some interesting reports, along with many others, on what happens here. And we found that the RF fields are not the cause or the electrostatics. It's what happens after that. They seem to join, combined in space and time, and cause a other effect, which happens to be like a shielding of the gravity pole, basically reverse gravity. And you'll see things lift off, or things go in a translational motion, as well as, if not, then metals tend to start bending and twisting and falling into different patterns and shapes. We found that it also affected the background radiation to quite an extent, where you get a couple of counts per minute, which is interesting. That's kind of a short version of it. I know that it encompasses a lot of different things. It's a Pandora's box of interesting things. It's been...
What type of scientists would be best positioned to evaluate your work? Would it be, say, someone with a PhD in electromagnetism?
Mostly military scientists. They're the ones that do that. Or ones that... Sorry, you're coughing there.
Yeah, I'm still quite ill.
Like René Louis Vallée, the father of the neutron bomb, and Andreas Sakharov, they were evaluating this. The Canadian scientists did their evaluation and classified it. McDonnell Douglas did their tests, which were not classified. And in the military-industrial complex in the United States, Lockheed, as well as the U.S. Pentagon, they have their own ideas and theories, as I did work with them in 83 and 84, on the premise that they didn't want to be caught off guard by the Soviets.
It's really unclear to me how gravity plays a role here, because, I mean, you know, most physical processes take place in a relatively normal way, whether independent of the type or strength of the gravitational field. I mean, witness astronauts who are in a zero gravity field as they circle the Earth. And obviously, those that are heavily dependent on gravity are going to be affected, but lots of processes go on unabated regardless, and certainly you don't expect any metal bars to be warping or bending merely because of an absence of gravity.
Well, don't forget the apparatus and equipment here. It's rather uncharted territory, and we just cross our fingers and hope that the building doesn't fall apart or something like that, really, in some of these tests, although we had somebody that was hit pretty severely who was filming here not too long ago. And he reported to Ken Shoulders and other people about what happened here. But he's okay. He's all right. And other times we had, like, my boss there, Alex DeZero, he said he felt light one time. That's going back in 1983 when he was walking across the top of the lab in a large warehouse that was funded by the U.S. government. So there's some problematic, weird stuff that goes on with this uncharted territory.
Judy, what do you make of John's explanation of the theory he's sketching here?
It makes sense. Something I'd like to add about astronauts, I wouldn't say that zero gravity. I would say you have forces in equilibrium.
Okay.
A force from rotating around the Earth.
Okay.
And then there's microgravity there, and they appear to be floating, but it's not because of zero gravity. It's that the forces are balanced.
Okay.
And I think something else might exist if you don't have gravity.
So you're talking, you know, net zero gravity versus zero gravity.
Right. I'm sure it's a different phenomenon. Going back to 9/11, there's something horrendous that happened that day. And no matter who did it, it's worth studying, because I noticed during the ad, time, they were talking about gas is going to be as high as $4 a gallon this summer. And it gets you thinking, if there was some technology to make energy that readily available, who would want to hide it? Why would you want to go research what happened on 9/11? It's mind-boggling that hasn't been seen. This tremendous activity happened, tremendous phenomenon. Why don't we study it and see how we can use it to our advantage? Let's say it just happened accidentally by who knows what. Let's harness that energy and provide free energy to people.
Well, why don't we go back to your website and you can take us through some of the effects that you think that John's work might shed some light on. Can we do that?
Yeah, we're on the page one of the series, and it introduces you to the flip cars.
Yep.
And the trees still have leaves on them.
That's figure eight.
Yeah, and let's see. Yeah, figure eight is especially good. I've got some testimony by some of the first responders in here.
Which building is that in figure 11, Judy? I'm not familiar with that.
That's the Millennium Hotel.
Oh, the Millennium Hotel.
Which was kind of interesting that, remember they said it was very badly, severely damaged, like it might have to be torn down? Like Bankers Trust?
looks brand new to me.
And it's there's a picture of some folks.
Of course, this was prior to 9/11. Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know where. There's a picture I have of some folks right in front of it, down figure 16.
Yeah, okay.
16, okay.
Yeah, 15 and 16. So figure 15 was taken 1 week after 9/11. You have a few holes in some windows.
Not much damage, pretty modest.
It doesn't look like it's severely damaged. And
yeah.
Figure 16 is on 9/11. These people are hiding out in there. There's a tree, has all the leaves on it. And that police car that we saw flipped, it was very near the front door of that building.
Okay.
Which is kind of interesting in itself. As to why you have leaves on trees here. Now, notice 3 days after that figure 15 picture was taken, figure 21, they've torn off all of that facade in the front, all the glass facing of the building.
What in the world was going on there, Judy?
What didn't they want you to see?
What motivated that, for God's sake? That had to be very expensive to do.
And between those two photographs, we have your 18, time-wise. That's the right side of the building. Look at those holes.
Very strange. Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guests, Judy Wood and John Hutchinson. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. My special guests today are Judy Wood and John Hutchinson, and we're on Judy Wood's website, and we're looking at a series of photographs in relation to 9/11, and in particular the Millennium Hotel. Was it actually the Millennium Hilton?
Yes.
And we're looking at some oddities related to its facade, which was a very beautiful glasswork, but which after 9/11, although it's only suffered relatively modest damage, is nevertheless removed. I find that quite bizarre.
I did too. And looking at figure 18, it gets really bizarre.
Yeah.
And I noticed there's also a photograph, 19A, which is of the One Liberty Plaza building that has round holes in those windows. Have you ever seen a window break with a round circular hole in it?
The holes I'm looking at are all kind of irregular. Some, I suppose, are sort of round, like that one closest to the pillar on the right. There are many different shapes as I'm looking at them. One has kind of an hourglass character.
In the middle of it, it starts with a round circular hole.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like that's a pretty odd shape for regular breakage of windows. So looking at figure 18, we see these, like, they're not perfectly round, but they're roundish in the small hole.
Yeah, yeah. Those are strange holes. What do you think brought those about?
Well, I asked John about if he's ever seen round holes in windows, and I showed him the One Liberty Plaza building, and I asked him about the effects that one would expect, and he answered me about, oh, but yeah, it tends to turn glass white.
What turns glass white?
John, you want to tell him?
Oh, excuse me. Yes, high voltage will do that. And those on a lot of our experiments, we had problems with mirrors exploding. Also, some of our capacitors would build a small pinhole right through them, which were glass, causing that kind of effect. As well as, we blew out a few windows. I sound bad, but that's what happens. And it can be, that particular effect can be demonstrated on a microscopic level with a Leyden jar and high voltage. And you can actually get a little pinhole through there with all the light, white, foamy kind of looking material around it. We had that problem when we're doing the Ark of the Covenant for Blue Book Films. Capacitors develop these holes through.
In the figure 18, near the right hand side, the bottom right hand side, on the solid part, not where the window is, but the part between the last lower two windows.
Yeah.
Looks like somebody took a soldering iron and just melted some holes through, but there's no material missing, you know, of the solid part of the building.
Mm-hmm.
The other side is kind of interesting.
Very curious.
And I'm sure folks have seen my collection of toasted car.
Sure.
This is where all the windows are missing, or most of the windows are missing.
Yeah.
And we had no reports of all the broken glass, all of the cars, on the pavement. There's no mention of that glass. This is the windows were gone, or they're blown out.
I see some interesting stuff further down the page. I'm sure we want to move there.
Okay. there's in WFC2 building, there's also holes, and there's no scarring of the remaining facade of the building, just the windows are missing. Now, this section on the Casimir Force, articles in mainstream media about how scientists have figured how to make that switch so that the molecules aren't attracting, but they're repelling each other. So this has been repeated by others. It is repeatable.
Looks like it comes out of the pages of a Harry Potter book, huh?
Yeah, magic.
Huh.
It's magic if you don't understand how it was done, like what David Copperfield does.
John, have you had any contact with these guys, Thomas Philbin or Ulf Leonhard?
Who are these guys?
These are guys from the University of St. Andrews.
No, mostly my contacts are with the U.S. Pentagon or Los Alamos or Lockheed, the other ones. Stanford Research, yes, but not that particular one.
Now, here we have some of your film and footage. You want to talk about it, Judy, figure 1 and so forth on 27, 28?
Yes.
29, 30, 31 look pretty interesting.
27 and 28. Interesting that you can see the bubbles alongside the boat on the surface of the water in figure 27 and 28. But notice the water surface is out of focus.
Yes.
And then in 29, 30, and 31, you have water pulling up. Jumping up. And it keeps getting pulled up until it keeps getting pulled apart more and more until it becomes foam.
So you think the water molecules here are actually being turned into foam by some process?
Imagine.
Oh, that's what we have at the bottom then, in figure 35 and 36 are the foam residue?
Yes.
And 32, 33, 34 are getting there?
Yes, and I'm sure you're familiar with figures 37 and 39. See any similarities?
Yeah, 37 and 39, yeah.
Material part.
Fascinating stuff. But,
figure 45, 46, and 47, that's a piece of stainless steel, I believe. John, you want to talk about that?
Oh, the stainless steel chunk?
Yeah, that has copper rust in it.
Okay.
No, I think that looks like an image of the Virgin Mary there, Judy.
of the metals.
Go ahead, John.
Oh, yes, sorry. The metals like that, well, what happens during the effects is that all the impurities in the metal itself, let's say it's mostly steel, will congeal into 100% pure spot through the metal sample, which is very interesting unto itself.
You mean they're moving around inside the metal bar to surface at certain points?
That's right, yes. And that's interesting for a lot of scientists, that particular effect unto itself. They get like pure copper coming out of solution, so to speak.
This is pretty puzzling stuff, John. Stand by, we'll be right back with my special guests, John Hutchinson and Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Hey, my special guests are Judy Wood and John Hutchinson. Judy, not to dispute your powers of analytical reasoning, of analogical reasoning, but, you know, in 27 through 36, we have water molecules turning to foam. And, of course, in 37 and 39, we have a steel and concrete building turning into dust. And you know, how far do you want to go in comparing them?
I again, was just looking at all the evidence. I saw a ground zero. And looking at physically what happened. And those pictures of the solid material coming apart, like I call it the Alka-Seltzer effect, 38.
Yeah.
Physically, what's happening there? All of the molecules and atoms are just flying apart. As that beam flies through the air, you know, I call it a wheat check.
Do you feel you understand the processes in 27 through 36?
I look at figure 38, I call it a shaving cream or Alka-Seltzer, and I see a solid material with all of the molecules in it suddenly repelling each other and flying apart. And the solid material never hits the ground. It's turned to dust before it reaches the ground. And, you know, physically, with the normal physics we think of, in order to turn something to dust by hitting something else, you have to have resistance. So there's a paradox here. If the resistance is what's pulverizing the piece, like you slam a piece of concrete down the ground and it turns into chunks, what's causing it flying through the air, what's causing that steel to turn to dust? What's it hitting? It's got to be another process that's going on.
Let's continue with your photo set here. We transmutation or rustification.
And, yeah, it's what and John was telling us about how in his samples the different components of the steel would make pure elements in different areas.
That's very odd, don't you think?
Yes, how you have stainless steel rusting.
Well, I mean, it's like all your white blood cells somehow accumulated at a certain part in your body or certain. It just strikes me that's very odd.
If something is pulling out some elements at a different rate than other elements.
Yeah.
If you look at figure 41, 42, 43.
Yes.
Remember all the rust, instant rust we saw?
Yes.
How steel does not rust that fast. Iron does. An iron skillet that you scrub with acetone and put, you know, in the kitchen sink and fill it with water.
Right.
An hour later, it's going to be bright orange with rust.
Yes.
Steel doesn't do that. That's why the structural steel is used in buildings, because it has carbon and some other, you know, small components in there that change its properties. Make it stronger and also make it more resistant to rust.
Yes.
So why would steel rusts like iron because it's been reduced to a pure element on the surface.
Yeah, very, very true. I mean, all that steel is what they call hot rolled steel. It forms a very tough layer of skin on the surface, and then painted a color, heavily painted too. Because it is structural steel, and it can't rust. Not allowed to rust. You got big problems.
In 43, it looks like it's just, you know, completely rinsed off. Washed away.
And then we get down to 48 and 49.
Steel bar.
Doesn't look very good, does it? Looks like it's been eaten by termites.
Or it's been at the bottom of the ocean for 100 years.
50 and 44.
I don't know what that material is in 44. It doesn't look like steel. It looks like it's got a copper coating or something.
What about then your toasted metal photographs here?
It is very interesting that the aluminum clad at the ground level had a toasted look to it. And I noticed the toasted look around that hole in the Red Bull can in figure 58. That caught my attention. It's that bronze kind of look to the aluminum. And if you look at the hazmat truck in figure 56, you see some strong similarities. And
With the metal?
Yeah. And it's also interesting when the steel engine blocks turn to dust, that the hood of the car is okay. It's just random things like that happen in different areas. And a bomb affects everything around the same way. A fire affects everything around the same way. It has to be some...
Conventional explosives would affect everything the same way.
Right. And the piece of steel we saw flying through the air turning into dust, they would have been blown apart at the point where it exploded. Then you just have the chunk sailing through the air. It doesn't continue after it flies through the air. So this is a process that gets motion and it continues, which is part of the problem of cleaning up ground zero. It's still continuing, and that is a major problem. Let's go to page 4. There's a link at the bottom and at the top of each page.
So yeah.
Before, we see some of the car. We see also a sample of aluminum that John had, and it did that delamination at specific layers through the aluminum. And this is an extruded aluminum. So why is it peeling apart on particular layers?
You have a study here about glass breaking, Judy?
Yeah.
Oh, this was to contrast with the windows in the.
Oh yeah, that
Millennium.
Some sample pictures there, but what?
Yeah.
When you throw something through a window.
Did you want us to flip to the next page?
Page 4.
Page 4. Oh, so I got to go a couple pages.
Or you just down at the bottom or at the top is a little menu, and you can click on the 4.
Okay, let me see. I'm on page 2. Oh, here's a little menu. JJ4. I got you. Go ahead.
And there it starts out with the peeling and disseminating appearance of the vegetables. I had noted that a year and a half ago. It just looked like the door peeled in half on these trucks. And I didn't know why that would be. It just seemed odd, but I noticed it repeatedly on various vehicles. And now we see John's sample of aluminum, where at various depths, it just peels apart. It sort of explodes from the inside out.
Like a fiber.
Yeah, and there's different frequencies. Sometimes they're very small, and sometimes they're coarse.
Very strange indeed. Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guests, John Hutchinson and Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. My special guests, John Hutchinson and Judy Wood, and I are concluding a conversation with a lot of diverse aspects to it. John, just out of curiosity, where were you on 9/11?
Oh, I was, I was laying down. I was sleeping in a girlfriend's room.
In Canada?
I'm in Canada. She's in Houston, Texas. And she phoned and said, oh, John, wake up. The United States is under attack.
Yeah.
And I thought she just had a bad dream, kind of thing, because it was
it sounded so
strange.
Remote.
And then another girlfriend phoned and said, John, you should went on another topic, said, too bad about the United States. And I thought, wait a minute. I got up and I thought, okay, I'm going to check the media, and I turned on a small TV I have here, and I said, uh-oh. Like, uh-oh. So as the day went on, we went into shock up here. A lot of the stores didn't open, and I was concerned about friends in the Pentagon, and I was sending off cards and that to Julie, Major Julie, I think her name was. So I was in mild shock. I couldn't believe it. I was trying to contact friends, and it just felt horrific. Because how many fans and friends do they have in those buildings, too, in New York City?
You had friends and family in New York? And
no, fans. Fans,
yeah.
From the TV shows.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, very supportive people and that kind of thing. So it was horrific. I couldn't believe it. And ever since then, the whole entire world changed after that event.
Just as Philip Zelikow said in his article in Foreign Affairs. Listen, you didn't happen to catch the show yesterday, did you?
No, I was busy with other stuff.
Well, Ace Baker was on, and Ace is an expert on digital processing and film fakery and all that. And he produced some videos that looked very much like some of your videos, but his were faked. Would you agree that it would be possible to produce videos that looked a lot like your videos that were faked?
I think with a good studio, you could duplicate almost anything in Hollywood. I'm sure you probably could. But what he did was like with a little kid's thing. I saw a little bit of it and kind of laughed at it. I said, okay, he's having fun, so he can have his fun.
Well, some of the effects, you know, that you're dealing with seem so peculiar and so odd that I think the possibility of fakery is one that can't be automatically ruled out, and that what he was doing was just showing how easy it is to do something like that. What Judy's got going here is rather intriguing, I must say. Where are we? Let's see. How far do you want to go down the page, Judy? There's lots of stuff on this page.
I'm going to jump down to figure 151.
151?
Yeah. What I'd like to add is what happened on 9/11 is pretty unbelievable, isn't it?
Sure.
Does that mean it didn't happen?
Yeah. I'm looking for 151 and I'm not finding it.
Well, is jellification?
Because your numbers are all mixed up here. I mean, there are many. It's not a linear progression.
Go down the scroll bar on the side. Go down to around the middle of the page.
Oh yeah, now I am. Okay, right below 150, where you got jellification. Okay. Horseshoe clip, steel beam bent like a horseshoe, 151. Got it. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays. Today, I have two special guests, but I'm going to begin with one of my all-time favorites, the person I consider to be the leading scientific expert on 9/11. Who has degrees in civil engineering with an emphasis in structural and engineering mechanics, also known as applied physics, and in materials engineering science, which so far as I have been able to discern are the disciplines most directly related to understanding what happened to the World Trade Center. She has what I consider to be the most important research website related to 9/11 at drjudywood.com. And, of course, it isn't rocket science to infer that I'm talking about Dr. Judy Wood. Judy, welcome back to the show.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to learn about your recent efforts. It's been a while. Morgan, I believe, had you on as his guest during a trip I made back east recently, but I'm very pleased to have you on as my guest.
Thank you.
Where would you like to begin while we're trying to track down John Hutchinson, who we're also going to have on?
Where should I begin?
Should we go to your what, drjudywood.com? Should we go to your website, Judy?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going there now. I should warn the audience, by the way, that I've had a terrible week. I'm suffering the effects of stomach flu, and it's really thrown me off my game. So if I don't sound the same or whatever, there's the explanation. I'm on your site, Judy, right now.
Okay, and go down to this various rows of pictures.
Right.
And you can go down to the third row where it shows
anomalies at the WTC and the Hutchison effect?
Yes. And before we go there, you can look at those various pairs of pictures. There's events that correlated between what we saw happen at the World Trade Center and the Hutchison effect. And as you know, for the past, you know, couple of years, I've been collecting evidence about what I see as having happened at the World Trade Center. I didn't know the answer. I didn't know what happened. I didn't know how it was done, but the first step is to determine what happened. You don't start out, well, I know about a BB gun, a slingshot, and bubble gum. So, eeny, meeny, miny, moe. It's got to be one of those that we pick from. No, you first determine what happened. Once you know what happened, then you can determine how it happened. And I've collected all of this evidence, and to keep from biasing my observations, I made up new words and new terms, just generic terms for the different phenomena I noticed. And after looking at all of those, I came upon the Hutchison effect, and oh my gosh, every single one of the effects are described there, can be reproduced, and have been in a lab. Down to, you know, the toasty cars, which I guess I'm well known for identifying, and the round holes in the windows. The fact that you have one type of material destroyed and another type of material right next to it is just fine. Like paper unburned next to toasted cars. Yeah, how can that be? But that's all common with the Hutchison effect.
I'm just getting my feet wet with regard to this, the Hutchison effect, which turns out to be actually a wide variety of different phenomena.
Correct. It's a group of effects, a whole slew of things that happen.
And I take it they're supposed to have some common cause, something having to do with a high volume of voltage.
Not necessarily, but what how I would describe the result is sort of on a molecular level or an atomic level.
Yeah.
And that was maybe the last straw for making the connection for me, is looking at the image of Tower 2. You know, remember the tipping top? And then all around the joint where it was tipping from, all around those floors, out came all of this big cloud of dust and fumes and who knows what. And it looked like the building, the material of the building, did something analogous to water turning into steam. It looked like the solid part of the building suddenly expanded like water does when it becomes steam. When water changes state into steam, it expands in a volume 1,600 times what it was as water. The water vapor. That's a tremendous amount of expansion.
Now, that would seem to me, Judy, if that happened to a human being, they'd be turned into very fine dust. Would I be wrong?
Well, that's if you're thinking about people as being water. But let's think about...
We are about, 87% water, aren't we?
You're relying on heat. And I've never felt that the heat was involved here. Matter of fact, the contrary. In some of the transcripts, the first responders talk about the temperature lowering, actually. The first dust cloud felt a little cooler than the ambient temperature. And as you remember when Greg Jenkins was talking with me, he was trying to insert in there vaporization. And no, I call it dustification because I don't know what the process is, but the building turned to dust. It cooked. To vaporize something, I think of cooking. And that building wasn't cooked. We never saw piles of burned bodies. You see people running down the street with a dust cloud chasing them. The dust cloud overtakes them and moves on, and you have people there, you know, standing up covered with dust. They're not burned. So we know it wasn't a cooking situation. But the cars have been, you know, pretty intriguing. We see fire, but often there's no smoke, which is another odd characteristic. Smokeless fires. So there's this slew of anomalies. It's kind of interesting. Oh, and the peeling doors on the vehicles. And the vehicle doors are not laminated, but they look like they're delaminating, which is another odd effect. This splits in half. But if you think of a solid material where all of the molecules are attracted to each other and they stick together, suddenly, instead of being attracted to each other, it's like a magnet, switch the sign, and they're suddenly repelling each other. Imagine what would happen if you did that to a building. It would look like the building expanded like water turning into steam. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's going to take me a while to absorb this. As I say, I'm just starting to get my feet wet here.
Think of the water turning into steam. The water, you know, the little molecules will suddenly expand.
Yeah.
They repel each other.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. My special guest today is Judy Wood, the leading expert on the scientific studies of 9/11. Judy, we're at your website, drjudywood.com, and we're looking at some photographs of anomalies, which you're comparing with photographs of the Hutchison effect. And I'm conceding that this is all very novel to me, the Hutchison effect, what it amounts to, what it really represents, its scientific validity is all new to me. So what you're telling me is, very interesting, but also in some ways puzzling. When I went to the John Hutchison website, I found a Hutchison effect, an explanation by Mark A. Solis. This is dated 1999, but when he talks about people who try to replicate it, try to disprove it using other methods, he's saying how their apparatus must be limited to the use of 75 watts of power from a 120-volt AC outlet, since that's all can be used by Hutchison's apparatus to levitate a 60-pound cannonball. I just don't know, you know, what we have going on here. Have you been able to perform any of these Hutchison experiments and replicate them?
The type of equipment that's needed, I do not have in my possession at this time. There's a tremendous amount of equipment that's needed. It's not like something you do with some pocket change.
Yeah.
In a cubbyhole.
Yeah. Because, of course, you know, I mean, while I have lots of reservations about Wikipedia, the article on John Hutchison on Wikipedia suggests that while there's been a great deal of interest in the phenomena he has identified, that no one's been able to replicate them. And, of course, that's raised a lot of questions in the minds of those who aren't quite sure what to make of it.
This is not true. And he has been able to replicate it very repeatedly. And it's puzzling why Wikipedia. Well, not puzzling. I think we know why Wikipedia.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, granting the source, but I'm just saying, what kinds of effects? Which of the effects is he replicating?
Well, the material coming apart, the levitation, quite a few different things. And it seems to be a hobby of folks to attack others before they do the research on what these effects are.
Uh huh.
And we see that in the 9/11 truth diversion movement, that it's to divert people from the truth, this movement we have. Why aren't we looking at the truth? Why divert off onto other things? Now, what you have to admit is on 9/11, something extraordinary happened. That was a tremendous amount of energy that came out of the World Trade Center, and it was left just dust. We had, in the morning, we had two 110-story buildings, and by noontime, we had not even a pile of rubble, basically just dust.
I know.
That is amazing.
Did you see that article I sent you lately that claimed there was a 12-story pile of rubble there of, you know...
You know, let's deal with looking for truth. We're looking at the truth ourselves. Will you agree that there was 110-story buildings that morning, and by noon, there was just basically dust?
Yeah, sure, I think I would agree with that, Judy.
Now let's look at this. We're busy focusing on negativeness and negative energy and so forth. Let's look at the positive thing from this. That's a tremendous technology. Why don't we find out how it works? And
yeah.
Good purpose.
Do we have, well, do we, if you're putting some eggs in the Hutchison effect basket, do you know how it works?
How it works?
How the Hutchison effect is brought about.
I'm not stating that it was the Hutchison effect. I'm stating it was something, it could have been that or something very much like it.
Uh-huh.
Now, the past few days, past day or so, the events have convinced me even more.
Tell me.
They've been sort of a confirmation. Why would the powers that be want folks to want to discredit the Hutchison effect? Any reason? Why is there suddenly this effort to discredit the Hutchison effect?
Well, what is there a sudden effort to discredit it?
I believe so.
It was curious to me when I had. When I had Ace on yesterday, you know, he had been studying some of the photos for the Hutchison effect, and it seemed to him that some of them involved video fakery. But when I punched out this article in Wikipedia, I was astonished that it had just been updated. It said this page was last modified on 27 February 2008 at 1655.
They modify it pretty often. It still gets modified, you know, ongoing, especially when it's of interest to folks. In the free energy community, this technology has been known for quite a while, and they have a Wikipedia type page on energy effects, and their page on John Hutchison is very different.
Where do we find that?
I'll put the link up later.
Okay, put a link up later. Yeah. Well, why don't we go through some of your comparisons here? I mean, do you want to look at them in greater detail?
Okay, but one thing I would comment on is, you know, if somebody shows you a picture of a horse, and then later, you know, and says, what is this, and doesn't show the camera what it is, and you say, oh, this is a picture of a horse, and then later they photograph you with a picture of a cow, and you're seeing the picture of a horse. In other words, they're taking it out of context. And things often get used that way, and that's not honest. There were some things I heard on the show yesterday that were very troubling to hear, such as that. Anyway, so yeah, let's talk about what's on the webpage. Let's go to from the front page.
Yeah.
Look on
anomalies.
There's a Red Bull can there.
The Red Bull can? Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead and click on that Red Bull can.
All right.
And that takes you to page one.
Right.
Not the index page, but page one. There's the boat videos first. Below that is a description of the effect. It was noted by someone saying to get either lift or disruption.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. Let's remember that theme. And there's also a link to that Mark Solis article. But what is interesting about this is if you start noticing, it's either the molecules get pulled apart, disruption, or the entire piece of something is lifted.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Sitting that I'm out of sorts here. Having a long battle this week with stomach flu, so if I sound a little off my game, you're absolutely right. With my special guest, Judy Wood, we're on her website, drjudywood.com, and if you scroll down that home page and to the Hutchison Effect collection of photographs, the second one from the left at the top, we'll bring you to the page where we are now. Judy, go ahead.
Option. So if we go to that and you start down, there's little segments I've put in there from different articles. And there's one that refers to get either lift or disruption.
Yeah. My Solis, the very guy I was quoting before.
He didn't, those other ones. It was,
okay, I'll bring him in.
And there's also the video of the Red Bull can. And one thing that's kind of interesting about that Red Bull can, it sort of takes a bow, like to the audience. It's bending over, and it's like its waist. It does some other things. It's like it's got a character to it. But right below the Red Bull can, you see pictures from the World Trade Center. Figures 5, 6, and 7.
Yeah.
We have upside down cars.
Yeah.
The car is parked in front of WFC1. It's just, you know, that first picture that's upside down.
Yeah.
And it's right side up. Notice the Jeep or SUV, the front end looks very toasted and sort of deformed, but the upside down car is less disturbed. And if you look at figure eight, it gives you another one of those aha moments. In the foreground, we have an upside-down car, and the underside of it looks fairly good. You don't see it. The tires look good. And then in the distance on the other side of the fireman, you see some tires sticking up in the air from another vehicle that looks like it's half upside down. Behind that is a whole bunch of trees in full foliage. All the leaves are still in the trees. So why are these cars upside down? Why are the vehicles upside down? If there's a big gust of wind, wouldn't you expect to see the leaves stripped off the trees?
Well, big gusts of wind don't turn cars upside down as a rule anyway. And, of course, below on Figure 9, you have more cars, in this case one on its side. And down below, upside down, Figure 12.
Yeah, and there's one that's piggybacked in Figure 10. And Figure 9, you see there's an ambulance in the distance. It's just, it's fine, but it's on its side. It's over on its side, at the bottom of the walkway.
Now, Judy, I've been informed that we have John Hutchison on the line. So, John, I want to welcome you to the Dynamic Duo.
Hello.
John, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, your background, your education, especially your training in science and technical subjects?
Well, my education is I flunked my coloring book and blocks. I'm self-taught, and I've been involved in many applications in engineering and research, and one of them happened to be into Nikola Tesla, which was able to replicate a lot of his experiments and pushing it beyond the envelope there. We were managed to cause levitation of objects and also the destruction of objects, as it's called. And it gained interest into the U.S. Military back in 1983, which they did a lot of experiments and tests with it.
So you grew up in Canada?
Yes, I did.
Whereabouts?
Oh, I'm in New Westminster, British Columbia. I grew up in North Vancouver, by the way.
In North Vancouver?
Yeah, I was away in Europe for a while and just landed in the West.
I presume you went to school there, high school, for example.
Well, I had a private tutor, and we were mostly into chemistry quite a bit, and I was in the chemical lab, also gunsmithing and machine tool work. But a little later on, I got into the Tesla stuff, which is kind of intriguing.
But you never matriculated to a university. You didn't actually earn. You don't have university degrees. You don't have an academic background or a scientific background other than what you learned in the process of your tutoring and your self-learning.
That's right, yes. Thank God for that, because if I went the normal route and all that stuff, then I'd be programmed to not think outside of the box.
Excuse me, I've been under the weather all week with a nasty case of the stomach flu. How have you made your living, John?
Well, I made my living through various, well, defense contractors, giving demonstrations for them, as well as, that's Canadian, as well as American and Germany. And of late, I've been doing a lot of television shows. There's really high demand for that, so they pay large amounts of money for coming here to film.
And before you got into the effects and so forth, your discoveries of how were you, you know, making ends meet?
Oh, way back past 1970?
Say, anytime. Fill me in.
Wow, that's back in 1970. Prior to that, I was involved in a major court case against the Canadian government on gun control issues. And prior to that, it was just on welfare, getting odd jobs, that kind of thing. So, it was a lot of fun. Not so long time ago. It seems like that.
You and Judy are kind of striking contrast cases because, of course, Judy has multiple degrees in academic background, 60 peer-reviewed articles, and your background is completely the opposite.
Yeah, kind of wild and woolly there, but it's been an interesting adventure. I get along fine with the scientists and that. We work together on different projects. And
go ahead, Judy.
Yeah, I've noticed something different with John than the typical student. John thinks. The students program. Well, they check the answer to the back of the book, and that's, you know, what the answer is.
Well, tell me what you think you got going here, Judy.
Like when I was first emailing John, I would present some things to him, and the trolls on the forums, I think we all know how the trolls are, they would ask questions just to stir up a fight. John would ask a question, I'd explain the answer that I thought, what I saw, and I'd show him the pictures, and he then understood, and then added even additional things to it, and that was very different than the program kind of response, everyone jump on the bandwagon.
So you feel you're attaining a high degree of a communication and mutual understanding with John.
Yes, and there were things that he brought up after he looked at the picture I sent him that I hadn't seen in the pictures.
Okay.
For example, that hole in the basement of Tower 2, you know, the hole in the street, and those guys are climbing down there.
Yeah.
Supposedly with this molten metal, but the pump.
Yeah.
And John was noticing somebody's shirt down there at the bottom.
Somebody's shirt?
Yeah, somebody's shirt that's sitting in the puddle on the ground. You know, there's various details like that that were
mm-hmm.
seen in the photographs.
Mm-hmm.
Once you look, and you look, and you think, and you observe, we're trying to pigeonhole everything, and I think our educational system teaches pigeonholing. Multiple choice tests, you know, here's the answer, memorize, like a robot. Instead of thinking.
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guests today, Judy Woods and John Hutchins. This is Jim Fetzer on The Dynamic Duo. I have two special guests today, John Hutchinson, who's associated with what is known as the Hutchinson Effect, which is a range of phenomena that have been very perplexing and difficult for most to understand. And Judy Wood, who is, in my opinion, the leading scientific expert on research related to the World Trade Center. Judy, you know, I mean, if John's work applies here, I mean, that would have potential promise if we understood the mechanism by means of which these phenomena have been induced by John, and then what would be the parallel or analogous mechanism, possibly on a much greater scale, that would apply to have brought about the parallel phenomena at the World Trade Center. Is this been the subject that you and he have discussed and contemplated?
What I have done is look at the similarities with the phenomena. Cause until I discovered John's work, I didn't know really what did it, but looking at the evidence, I could start describing what must have done it or the nature of it. As you know, I kept limiting things more and more, getting a smaller and smaller circle of unknowns. You know, I would say a beam weapon, but I wouldn't say from where or what type of beam or what wavelengths. And I often would say, well, here's a spectrum. Take your pick or mix and match, whichever ones you please.
Uh-huh.
And apparently that's what John does.
Well, how has your contact with him or your newfound familiarity with his research strengthened your own?
It's given hope to what we can do with this world. I think, again, what I was mentioning earlier, that was some horrendous activity on that day. Something amazing happened. And think if we could harness that energy and use it for good purposes.
Well, do you feel you understand the phenomena that he has detected sufficiently well to be able to understand how the analogous phenomena could have been brought about, in other words, the causal mechanisms in the World Trade Center?
I've numerous articles there presented in on this webpage in this series.
Yeah.
Enough to see that these various phenomena have been described by others, quite a few others, and it does, it seems to interface in the area of cold fusion as well. And it's really interesting to read some of these articles.
Do you believe the effects that John describes and has, you know, created videos of and so forth are manifestations of cold fusion?
I don't know what you call cold fusion. I don't make clear lines between things. All these phenomena are interrelated, and it has to do with things on a very small scale, like on the atomic level.
So you think microphysics actually might hold the key to understanding the events of the World Trade Center?
I don't know about understanding it. We know the events occurred. You mean being able to reproduce it?
Yeah, for example.
Well, it was produced to begin with, so we know something there worked.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
So I think you'll have to agree that something happened on 9/11.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
And so we know it's real. It works, whatever it is.
You could say there was a replication when the North Tower came down after it was destroyed, after the South Tower was destroyed.
Right, it is repeatable.
But that doesn't mean you or I could do it. John, do you have any trouble replicating your results?
No. Actually, I've been doing it since 1997 for production companies that come and go out of here, for NBC, Griffin Productions, National Geographic TV and Film, plus many others. It's pretty repeatable right now as it stands. But in the old days, it was pretty tough to do sometimes. But
what's one of your favorites that you have exhibited numerous times that has been relatively straightforward to replicate?
Well, I think the movements is a lot of fun to do. It seems to affect a 10 square block radius in the city. And it's becoming more and more complaints are being lodged to the city hall, which is not a good thing. But anyway, it's...
Elaborate on that. You mean that the effects you're bringing about are having large-scale repercussions over a 10 block area?
That's right, yes. According to some doctors and Tom Sky, who was here filming not too long ago, he suffered some drastic effects, which he had to be interviewed by Ken Shoulders, who's working on my research also and replicated some of it. But just the other day I learned also that a tenant in here is saying the library computers, the signals dropped right down and went back up again, as well as his battery went dead in his computer and his clock stopped, and he was knocking on my door, asking me, well, this is going on kind of thing. And I'm thinking, okay, I know the effects are sometimes can start to get into other buildings and have been the cause of tenants and people going to the news media and talking about it. But I just don't want people coming around, saying, well, this is getting a little too much.
Take one of the simplest phenomena you replicate. What's the total apparatus required to replicate the effect?
The total at this point in time or before?
Anytime now. If I wanted to replicate it, what would it take for me to do it? What's the phenomenon, and what would it take for me to replicate it?
Well, I'd say about several tons of equipment to do that. That means RF generation equipment, small micro Tesla type generators, phase inverters, extremely high electrostatics, and a small alpha beta source.
So if we're looking at at some of your films, then there's this couple of tons of equipment that were not seen in the films, right?
Normally, people like to film in on the target area.
Yeah.
And then I'm at the control panel. Then they in the TV shows, they'll actually come around and film me doing all of the operations of the.
And you're talking about a couple of tons of equipment to move a nail around or cause the water to boil or whatever. I mean, it's or to crush a can. What type of phenomena are we talking about? You know, all the above.
Yeah, basically, it's all working on a subatomic level. I mean, there's been scientific papers written up on it. And previous to that, the effects were very random but very strong. It was about roughly 22 tons of equipment I had in the warehouses where we did the main demonstrations.
Well, if we're talking about something like a World Trade Tower, how many tons of equipment do you think would be involved there? Or are you...
Well, getting into that aspect of the World Trade Center... It's a rough area, but I'm thinking of foreign countries that have the technology, like that made mainstream media, such as CNN, and that were in Iraq. The Russians were coming in to get out their documents and machines that incorporated scalar weapon technologies, and that made mainstream news media. And it's always been a concern of the U.S. government with the Soviets and the advanced... type of scalar weaponry they do have, and they actually have projected it across North America in 1978 to 1981, what they call the Soviet Woodpecker signals, which were horrendous, which were very strong and affected AM radio.
Tell me more about this. What were the Woodpecker signal?
Well, they would jam up radio, ham communications and other communications, as well as AM radio. And then they would set off these huge, what they call cold hole explosions in the atmosphere, which made mainstream media. It caused a lot of sensation and a lot of TV shows. And
We'll come back to this momentarily. Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, John Hutchinson and Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today I have two special guests, Judy Wood, well-known to my audience, and John Hutchinson of the Hutchinson Effect. John, I'd like to ask you a bit more about your work here. Theories, of course, are common in science, and you know, presumably there's a theory about the phenomena that you are studying, and that theory involves certain laws that involve causal relations, so that if you have a certain arrangement or constellation of conditions, then with either invariably or with a certain probability, you're going to produce or induce or bring about a certain effect. But I'm just wondering if you could sketch for us, you know, something about the theory that lies behind the phenomena that you take to be at least a sketch of an explanation of what's going on here.
Okay, for sure. There was I don't normally go into theories too much. I have my own personal theory that is affected on the subatomic level. But René Louis Vallée and Andrei Sakharov wrote up some interesting reports, along with many others, on what happens here, and we found that the RF fields are not the cause or the electrostatics. It's what happens after that. They seem to join, combined in space and time, and cause a other effect, which happens to be like a shielding of the gravity pole, basically reverse pole of gravity. And you'll see things lift off, or things go in a translational motion, as well as, if not, then metals tend to start bending and twisting and falling into different patterns and shapes. We found that it also affected the background radiation to quite an extent, where you get a couple of counts per minute, which is interesting. That's kind of a short version of it. I know that it encompasses a lot of different things. It's a Pandora's box of interesting things that's been...
What type of scientists would be best positioned to evaluate your work? Would it be, say, someone with a PhD in electromagnetism?
Mostly military scientists. They're the ones that do that. Or ones that... Sorry, you're coughing there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm still quite ill.
like Randy Lewis Vallee, the father of the neutron bomb, and Andrew Sakharov, they were evaluating this. The Canadian scientists did their evaluation and classified it. McDonnell Douglas did their tests, which were not classified. And in the military-industrial complex in the United States, Lockheed, as well as the U.S. Pentagon, they have their own ideas and theories, as I did work with them in 83 and 84, on the premise that they didn't want to be caught off guard by the Soviets.
It's really unclear to me how the how gravity plays a role here, because, I mean, you know, most physical processes take place in a relatively normal way, whether independent of the type or strength of the gravitational field. I mean, witness astronauts who are in a zero gravity field as they circle the Earth. And obviously, those that are heavily dependent on gravity are going to be affected, but lots of processes go on unabated regardless, and certainly you don't expect any metal bars to be warping or bending merely because of an absence of gravity.
Well, don't forget the apparatus and equipment here. It's rather uncharted territory, and we just cross our fingers and hope that the building doesn't fall apart or something like that, really, in some of these tests, although we had somebody that was hit pretty severely who was filming here not too long ago. And he reported to Ken Shoulders and other people about what happened here. But he's okay. He's all right. And other times we had, like, my boss, or Alex DeZero, he said he felt light one time. That's going back in 1983 when he was walking across the top of the lab in a large warehouse that was funded by the U.S. government. So there's some problematic, weird stuff that goes on with this uncharted territory.
Judy, what do you make of John's explanation of the theory he's sketching here?
It makes sense. Something I'd like to add about astronauts, I wouldn't say that zero gravity. I would say you have forces in equilibrium.
Okay.
A force from rotating around the Earth.
Okay.
And then there's microgravity there, and they appear to be floating, but it's not because of zero gravity. It's that the forces are balanced.
Okay.
And I think something else might exist if you don't have gravity.
So you're talking, you know, net zero gravity versus zero gravity.
Right. I'm sure it's a different phenomenon. Going back to 9/11, there's something horrendous that happened that day. And no matter who did it, it's worth studying, because I noticed during the ad time, they were talking about gas is going to be as high as $4 a gallon this summer. And it gets you thinking, if there was some technology to make energy that readily available, who would want to hide it? Why would you want to go research what happened on 9/11? It's mind-boggling that hasn't been seen. This tremendous activity happened, tremendous phenomenon. Why don't we study it and see how we can use it to our advantage? Let's say it just happened accidentally by who knows what. Let's harness that energy and provide free energy to people.
Well, why don't we go back to your website and you can take us through some of the effects that you think that John's work might shed some light on. Can we do that?
Yeah, we're on the page one of the series, and it introduces you to, the flip cars.
Yep.
And the trees still have leaves on them.
That's figure eight.
Yeah, and figure eight is especially good. I've got some testimony by some of the first responders in here.
Which building is that in figure 11, Judy? I'm not familiar with that.
That's the Millennium Hotel.
Oh, the Millennium Hotel. Mm.
Which was kind of interesting that, remember they said it was very badly, severely damaged, like it might have to be torn down?
Hmm.
Like Bankers Trust?
looks brand new to me.
There's a picture of some folks.
Of course, this was prior to 9/11. Yeah, go ahead.
There's a picture I have of some folks right in front of it, down figure 16.
Yeah, okay.
16, okay.
Yeah, 15 and 16. So figure 15 was taken 1 week after 9/11. You have a few holes in some windows.
Not much damage, pretty modest.
It doesn't look like it's severely damaged. And
yeah.
Figure 16 is on 9/11. These people were hiding out in there. There's a tree, has all the leaves on it. And that police car that we saw flipped, it was very near the front door of that building.
Okay.
Which is kind of interesting in itself. As to why you have leaves on trees here. Now, notice 3 days after that figure 15 picture was taken, figure 21, they've torn off all of that facade in the front, all the glass facing of the building.
What in the world was going on there, Judy?
What didn't they want you to see?
What motivated that, for God's sake? That had to be very expensive to do.
And between those two photographs, we have figure 18, time-wise. That's the right side of the building. Look at those holes.
Very strange. Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guests, Judy Wood and John Hutchinson. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. My special guests today are Judy Wood and John Hutchinson, and we're on Judy Wood's website, and we're looking at a series of photographs in relation to 9/11, and in particular the Millennium Hotel. Was it actually the Millennium Hilton?
Yes.
And we're looking at some oddities related to its facade, which was a very beautiful glasswork, but which after 9/11, although it's only suffered relatively modest damage, is nevertheless removed. I find that quite bizarre.
I did too. And looking at figure 18, it gets really bizarre.
Yeah.
And I noticed there's also a photograph, 19A, which is of the One Liberty Plaza building that has round holes in those windows. Have you ever seen a window break with a round circular hole in it?
The holes I'm looking at are all kind of irregular. Some, I suppose, are sort of round, like that one closest to the pillar on the right.
There
are many different shapes as I'm looking at them. One has kind of an hourglass character.
In the middle of it, it starts with a round circular hole.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like that's a pretty odd shape for regular breakage of windows. So looking at figure 18, we see these, like, they're not perfectly round, but they're roundish in the small hole.
Yeah, yeah. Those are strange holes. What do you think brought those about?
Well, I asked John about if he's ever seen round holes in windows, and I showed him the One Liberty Plaza building, and I asked him about the effects that, you know, one would expect, and he answered me about, it tends to turn the glass white.
What turns glass white?
John, you want to tell him?
Oh, excuse me. Yes, high voltage will do that. And also in a lot of our experiments, we had problems with mirrors exploding. Also, some of our capacitors would build a small pinhole right through them, which were glass, causing that kind of effect. As well as, we blew out a few windows. sound bad, but that's what happens. And it can be, that particular effect can be demonstrated on a microscopic level with a Leyden jar and high voltage. And you can actually get a little pinhole through there with all the light, white, foamy kind of looking material around it. We had that problem when we're doing the Ark of the Covenant for Blue Book Films. Capacitors develop these holes through.
In the figure 18, near the right-hand side, the bottom right-hand side, on the solid part, not where the window is, but the part between the last lower two windows.
Yeah.
Looks like somebody took a soldering iron and just melted some holes through, but there's no material missing, you know, of the solid part of the building.
Mm-hmm.
The other side is kind of interesting.
Very curious.
And I'm sure folks have seen my collection of toasted car.
Sure.
This is where all the windows are missing, or most of the windows are missing.
Yeah.
And we had no reports of all the broken glass, all of the cars, on the pavement. There's no mention of that glass. They said the windows were gone, or they blown out.
I see some interesting stuff further down the page. I'm sure we want to move there.
Okay. There's in WFC2 building, there's also holes, and there's no scarring of the other remaining facade of the building, just the windows are missing. Now, this section on the Casimir Force, articles in mainstream media about how scientists have figured how to make that switch so that the molecules aren't attracting, but they're repelling each other. So this has been repeated by others. It is repeatable.
Looks like it comes out of the pages of a Harry Potter book, huh?
Yeah, magic.
Huh.
It's magic if you don't understand how it was done, like what David Copperfield does.
John, have you had any contact with these guys, Thomas Philbin or Ulf Leonhard?
Who are these guys?
These are guys from the University of St. Andrews.
No, mostly my contacts are with the U.S. Pentagon or Los Alamos. Or Lockheed, the other ones. Stanford Research, yes, but not that particular one.
Now here we have some of your film and footage. You want to talk about it, Judy, figure one and so forth on 27, 28?
Yes.
29, 30, 31 look pretty interesting.
27 and 28. Interesting that you can see the bubbles alongside the boat on the surface of the water in figure 27 and 28, but notice the water surface is out of focus.
Yes.
And then in 29, 30, and 31, you have water pulling up, jumping up. And it keeps getting pulled up until it keeps getting pulled apart more and more until it becomes foam.
So you think the water molecules here are actually being turned into foam by some process.
Imagine.
Oh, that's what we have at the bottom then, in figure 35 and 36 are the foam residue.
Yes.
And 32, 33, 34 are getting there.
Yes, and I'm sure you're familiar with figures 37 and 39. See any similarities?
Yeah, 37 and 39, yeah.
Material
part. Fascinating stuff. But,
figure 45, 46, and 47, that's a piece of stainless steel, I believe. John, you want to talk about that?
Oh, the stainless steel chunk?
Yeah, that has copper rust in it.
Okay.
No, I think that looks like an image of the Virgin Mary there, Judy.
So the metal.
Go ahead, John.
Oh, yes, sorry. The metals like that, well, what happens during the effects is that all the impurities in the metal itself, let's say it's mostly steel, will congeal into 100% pure spot through the metal sample, which is very interesting unto itself.
You mean they're moving around inside the metal bar to surface at certain points?
That's right, yes. And that's interesting for a lot of scientists, that particular effect unto itself. They get like pure copper coming out of solution, so to speak.
This is pretty puzzling stuff, John. Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guests, John Hutchinson and Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Hey, my special guests are Judy Wood and John Hutchinson. Judy, not to dispute your powers of analytical reasoning, of analogical reasoning, but, you know, in 27 through 36, we have water molecules turning to foam. And, of course, in 37 and 39, we have a steel and concrete building turning into dust. And you know, how far do you want to go in comparing them?
I again, was just looking at all the evidence. I saw a ground zero. And looking at physically what happened. And those pictures of the solid material coming apart, like I call it the Alka-Seltzer effect, 38.
Yeah.
Physically, what's happening there? All of the molecules and atoms are just flying apart. As that beam flies through the air, you know, I call that a wheat check. The
Well, do you feel you understand the processes in 27 through 36?
I look at figure 38. I call this shaving cream or Alka-Seltzer, and I see a solid material with all of the molecules in it suddenly repelling each other and flying apart. And the solid material never hits the ground. It's turned to dust before it reaches the ground. And, you know, physically, with the normal physics we think of, in order to turn something to dust by hitting something else, you have to have resistance. So there's a paradox here. If the resistance is what's pulverizing the piece, like you slam a piece of concrete down the ground, it turns into chunks. What's causing it flying through the air? What's causing that steel to turn to dust? What's it hitting? It's got to be another process that's going on.
Let's continue with your photo set here. We transmutation, rustification.
And yeah, it's what. And John was telling us about how in his samples, different components of the steel would make pure elements in different areas.
That's very odd, don't you think?
Yes, how you have stainless steel rusting.
Well, I mean, it's like all your white blood cells somehow accumulated at a certain part in your body or. Certain, it just strikes me that's very odd.
If something is pulling out some elements at a different rate than other elements.
Yeah.
If you look at figure 41, 42, 43.
Yes.
Remember all the rust, instant rust we saw?
Yes.
How steel does not rust that fast. Iron does. An iron skillet that you scrub with acetone and put, you know, in the kitchen sink and fill it with water.
Right.
An hour later, it's going to be bright orange with rust.
Yes.
Steel doesn't do that. That's why the structural steel is used in buildings, because it has carbon and some other, you know, small components in there that change its properties. It make it stronger and also make it more resistant to rust.
Yes.
So why would steel rusts like iron because it's been reduced to a pure element on the surface.
Yeah, very, very true. I mean, all that steel, what they call hot rolled steel, it forms a very tough layer of skin on the surface, and then painted a color, heavily painted too. Because it is structural steel, it can't rust. Not allowed to rust. You got big problems.
In 43, it looks like it's just, you know, completely rinsed off. Washed away.
And then we get down to 48 and 49.
At least it's a steel bar.
Doesn't look very good, does it? Looks like it's been eaten by termites.
Or it's been at the bottom of the ocean for 100 years?
50 and 44?
I don't know what that material is in 44. It doesn't look like steel. It looks like it's got a copper coating or something.
What about then your toasted metal photographs here?
It is very interesting that the aluminum clad at the ground level had a toasted look to it. And I noticed the toasted look around that hole in the Red Bull can in figure 58. That caught my attention. It's that bronze kind of look to the aluminum. And if you look at the hazmat truck in figure 56, you see some strong similarities.
With the metal?
Yeah. It's also interesting when the steel engine blocks turn to dust, that the hood of the car is okay. It's just random things like that happen in different areas. And a bomb affects everything around the same way. A fire affects everything around the same way. It has to be some...
Conventional explosives would affect everything the same way.
Right. and those steel piece of steel we saw flying through the air turning into dust, they would have been blown apart at the point where they exploded. Then you just have the chunk sailing through the air. It doesn't continue after it flies through the air. So this is a process that gets motion and it continues, which is part of the problem of cleaning up ground zero. It's still continuing, and that is a major problem. We'd like to go to page four. There's a link at the bottom and at the top of each page.
So yeah.
Before, we see some of the we see also a sample of aluminum that John had, and it did that delamination at specific layers through the aluminum. And this is an extruded aluminum. So why is it peeling apart on particular layers?
You have a study here about glass breaking, Judy?
Yeah.
Oh, this was to contrast with the windows in the
that
Millennium.
Some sample pictures there, but what?
Yeah.
When you throw something through a window.
Did you want us to flip to the next page?
Page four.
Page four. Oh, so I got to go a couple pages.
Or you just down at the bottom or at the top of the little menu, and you can click on the four.
Okay, let me see. I'm on page two. Oh, here's a little menu. JJ4. I got you. Go ahead.
And there it starts out with the peeling and eliminating appearance of the vessels. I had noted that a year and a half ago. It just looked like the door peeled in half on these trucks. And you know, I didn't know why that would be. It just seemed odd, but I noticed it repeatedly on various vehicles. And now we see John's sample of aluminum, where at various depths, it just peels apart. It sort of explodes from the inside out.
Like a fiber.
Yeah, and there's different frequencies. Sometimes they're very small, and sometimes they're coarse.
Very strange indeed. Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guests, John Hutchinson and Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. My special guests, John Hutchinson and Judy Wood, and I are concluding a conversation with a lot of diverse aspects to it. John, just out of curiosity, where were you on 9/11?
Oh, I was, I was laying down. I was sleeping in a girlfriend's room.
In Canada?
I'm in Canada. She's in Houston, Texas. And she phoned and said, John, wake up. The United States is under attack.
Yeah.
And I thought she just had a bad dream, you know, kind of thing, because it was...
It sounded so
strange.
Remote.
And then another girlfriend phoned and said, John, she went on another topic, said, too bad about the United States. And I thought, wait a minute. I got up and I thought, okay, I'm going to check the media, and I turned on a small TV I have here, and I said, uh-oh. Like, uh-oh. So as the day went on, we went into shock up here. A lot of stores didn't open, and I was concerned about friends in the Pentagon, and I was sending off cards and that to Julie, Major Julie, I think her name was. So I was in mild shock. I couldn't believe it. I was trying to contact friends, and it just felt horrific. Because how many fans and friends did I have in those buildings, too, in New York City?
You had friends and family in New York and...
No, fans
yeah.
From the TV shows.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, very supportive people and that kind of thing. So it was horrific. I couldn't believe it. And ever since then, the whole entire world changed after that event.
Just as Philip Zelikow said in his article in Foreign Affairs. Listen, you didn't happen to catch the show yesterday, did you?
No, I was busy with other stuff.
Well, Ace Baker was on, and Ace is an expert on digital processing and film fakery and all that. And he produced some videos that looked very much like some of your videos, but his were fake. Would you agree that it would be possible to produce videos that looked a lot like your videos that were faked?
I think with a good studio, you could duplicate almost anything in Hollywood. I'm sure you probably could. But what he did was like with a little kid's thing. I saw a little bit of it and kind of laughed at it. I said, okay, he's having fun, so he can have his fun.
Well, some of the effects, you know, that you're dealing with seem so peculiar and so odd that I think the possibility of fakery is one that can't be automatically ruled out, and that what he was doing was just showing how easy it is to do something like that. What Judy's got going here is rather intriguing, I must say. Where are we? Let's see. How far do you want to go down the page, Judy? There's lots of stuff on this page.
I'm going to jump down to figure 151.
151?
Yeah. But what I'd like to add is what happened on 9/11 is pretty unbelievable, isn't it?
Sure.
Does that mean it didn't happen?
Yeah. I'm looking for 151 and I'm not finding it.
Well, is jellification...
Because your numbers, you know, your numbers are all mixed up here. I mean, there are many... it's not a linear progression.
Go down, the scroll bar on the side, go down to around the middle of the page.
Oh, yeah, now I am. Okay, right below 150 where you got jellification, okay. Horseshoe clip, steel beam bent like a horseshoe, 151, got it.
Note the beams right below that.
Yeah.
Okay, John did these beams. Now, how could they be bent like that? How could you bend a solid steel beam like that? They're like 3 inches in diameter. No
mm-hmm.
No signs of heating. And notice figure 157, which is one of the core columns from one of the WTC buildings. How could that possibly bend in that kind of loop like that?
Mm-hmm.
Something buckles, it kinks in one place. And then all of the energy goes there, and the thing, you know, you stood on a soda pop can and crunched it. Distinct breakages in the material when it buckles. You know, the soda pop can, when you step on it, does it round out and curl up into a circle. So when I see these columns that are curled like that, that's not a mechanical loading that did that.
Yes, and something weird was going on. And whether it was or wasn't, you know, related to what John's been doing is a good question.
The fact that it went on is true. You see it, and you can't explain it by the normal conventional means.
Well, I sure agree with that, Judy.
And if you see John's specimens, wouldn't you say the same thing about that?
Yes. They're both odd phenomena.
So you start wondering about it more. Instead of focusing on trying to, you know, tear something down, let's see what we can learn from these things. And notice, you know, what phenomenon that we see, and it helps so much in being able to find out what's going on. Like in figure 161, 162, and 163,
yeah,
those are beams that were taken from the World Trade Center. NIST has these on its site. And the thing that really shocks me is figure 163. There's a set of three outer columns, I call them wheat checks.
Yeah.
They're rolled up like a rolled up carpet.
In 163?
Yeah. You see the three...
You mean on the ground there, sort of rolled? Is that what they are?
Yes. Now, what kind of loading would cause that? They're not deformed in the axial direction.
Pretty interesting.
And if you notice that structure that's standing, it looks like various pieces of steel kind of wilted into wet tissue and flopped over onto the structure.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't. That's not a mechanical loading.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder why NIST has this on their webpage.
You wonder why what?
NIST has this on its webpage.
Oh, NIST does have it on its webpage?
Yes, these pictures. So they're everywhere.
Maybe to imply that they have studied it and know all about it and that... presume that they have answers to questions that they might otherwise raise?
something. It's interesting that they chose this structure. It looks like a nice sculpture, but this rolled up carpet look on the ground where the three core columns, I mean three outer columns with the spandrel plates wrapped around, and the beams are still straight. They haven't buckled. There's some odd things that we saw going on that day.
Well, why don't you give us a couple of minutes worth here of sort of an overview of why you think this Hutchison stuff may be valuable here?
I think it's so important that we not focus on the answer. Like, let's quit get the answer and forget about looking at the data.
Uh-huh.
It's so important to look at the data, especially in a new phenomenon, and think about the data rather than trying to establish, you know, something to see if it's right or wrong and criticize it.
Oh, you criticize. You convinced me about looking at the data quite a long time ago, Judy.
And you learned something by looking at the data.
I think it was November of 2006.
And when the powers that be, or let's say the perpetrators who carried out this activity, would they want you to look at the data? So they just find all sorts of ways to distract you from looking at the data.
John, let me ask, while I got you here, do you think your phenomena have something to do with 9/11? Do you think there's an overlap there?
It's of a high probability, understanding what other research has been going on with directed energy weapons and how powerful they actually are.
Well, special thanks to my guests, John Hutchison and Judy Wood, for coming on to the Dynamic Duo. This is Jim Fetzer, your host. Thank you all for listening.